has been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday midweek edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson. And I'm here with chartered financial analyst and certified financial planner Barry Kite. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Bill.
We got just a little bit of a, some short-term profit taking after yesterday's huge move in the market. The NASDAQ yesterday was up 462 points. I have to go back in time to try to remember a day like that in the NASDAQ. Today it's down about 11, so no big deal. It's at 15,676. Its all-time high was just above 16,000. So, you know, we made up a lot of ground yesterday that we had lost during Omicron. The Dow is up 37 right now to 35,765. The S&P's up just 4 or 5 points right now, somewhere in there. The Russell 2000's up about 0.5%. Crude oil is back above 70, but it's down 24 cents today to 71.81. Gold is just, you know, gold just does not venture very far from 1800. It just hangs right in that neighborhood and doesn't really leave it. 1782, you've got the interest rates up 2 basis points. The Omicron fears kind of fading into the woodworks is helping interest rates kind of ratchet back up. They went down quite a bit. They got down to 1.38. Now we're back to 1.50. And lastly, Bitcoin is down $849. It's sitting at $50,798 at the moment. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, CFA Barry Kite. We had a 492-point move in the Dow yesterday. That was on top of Monday's good move in the Dow. And that's the two best days in about 13 months. And it goes along with what we've said many times, Barry, in a bull market, which has been going for 12 years, you can't afford to miss days like yesterday, right?
Yeah, that's a material move in the calculation. If you missed one, you know, go back and look. If you missed the 10 biggest days in the market over whatever the time period is, well, that's going to be one of the biggest 10 days in the market.
Definitely, NASDAQ up 462 yesterday, and it's closing in on its all-time high of 16,058 when we were down below 15,000 there for a bit. And we had the Dow down below the 200-day moving average for a bit. And instead of acting as a catalyst for further selling, it acted as a springboard, which many times it does. That first piercing, second piercing of a major moving average like that many times can act as a springboard, just the opposite of what you would expect. The semiconductors and software sector sizzled yesterday, especially the software sector. It was just on fire. Massive breakout in Broadcom yesterday and several others. And, of course, you had the Biden and Putin going at yesterday. We really don't know a lot of what was said. It's all I know that during their discussion, Amazon Web Services had a big outage. You wonder if Putin said, okay, you know, our guys can take down a lot. Yeah, I don't know if they're linked or not, but I tried to buy something during that time, and it was down. We also have the Omicron fears continuing to fade into the woodwork. And that's helping. In fact, you had Dr. Fauci say yesterday that Omicron is almost certainly not more severe than the Delta variant. And you had news today that Pfizer says that three doses, you know, maybe Pfizer's going to go to a subscription model, Barry.
Right? Yeah. It's
you can subscribe and get go in every month and get your vaccine shot and your boosters.
Yeah. The vast,
put it in your cereal. But now
vaccine
they're saying,
as a service.
Yeah. Three shots ought to do it against Omicron. You don't have any worries. And of course that chip sector was just on fire. I just want to reiterate that. Maybe Intel was really the driver there because they announced they're going to spin off Mobileye, which I said, you know, Mobileye was a public traded company when Intel bought it, and it wasn't a very good stock when Intel bought it. Now Intel is really hyping it here, saying, oh, we're going to be, you know, on a par with Tesla. With our spinoff of Mobileye, I take that with a real grain of salt. But you had huge moves yesterday in AMD, NVIDIA, Applied Materials looked like it was getting ready to break out. Qualcomm was breaking out. The breakout of the day for me was Broadcom, which is AVGO. That was the semiconductor's best trading day. There you go. You can't miss those best trading days. If you didn't have exposure to the semiconductors yesterday, you would have missed out. It was the best trading day in 8 months for the semiconductor sector. And then, you know, we start off the day with good news from Pfizer, like I say, that has helped the markets. It's a truism in the market that every time bad news comes out or, you know, remember when that Omicron we first heard about it in South Africa? The Dow was down 1,000 points that day, right? Just on that news. And, it's been my observation during my 21 years as a money manager, the market almost always overreacts. Which creates opportunity, right? Because, you know, eventually, and the more I thought through this whole issue with Omicron and is it going to end the bull market and is this the one that will bring our economy to its knees once again and the shutdown, I just couldn't see it. But, you know, you have to wait for the market to do its thing. And it looks like it's done doing its thing over Omicron. And now it looks ahead to the next panic, and I've got a few to talk about here today. But first, I like to do these. We've got a couple more macro forecasts out today. The Citigroup, they expect the Fed to announce it will quicken the pace of trimming asset purchases at its meeting next week. Okay, so there you go. The Fed will be meeting next week, and Citigroup is expecting them to actually announce the quickening of the pace of trimming asset purchases, which could lead to interest rates moving higher. So Citigroup a little bit hawkish there on interest rates, and that would also be hawkish on the bond market, and so to some extent the technology sector. LPL, they see 4 to 4.5% GDP growth next year. That's pretty good. 4 to 4.5%. I mean, those are China-like numbers. China's been around 6 or 7, if you can believe their numbers. But I mean, that would be fantastic to have 4% to 4.5% GDP growth in 2022. And LPL is also putting their neck on the line with their target price. They're looking for 5,100 by the end of next year on the S&P 500. I would just say, Barry, that's pretty much kind of the consensus. There's a few outsiders like Morgan Stanley and, you know, I've seen some of the really perma-bear people saying the S&P is worth about 2,000. They're way outside of the norm. But LPL's pretty much right in there with everybody else, seeing the S&P at 5,100 next year. It's currently at 4,700. I would suffice it to say that we're not going to have a year like we had last year as we came out of the COVID. And this year is a pretty good year because we're still seeing these huge comparisons versus a pretty sickly year last year. But those comparisons are starting to dwindle now, and I would not expect the kind of returns in the market next year. And I think it will be a different group of stocks that will lead the market next year. Today, it's all about, I looked at the S&P 500. The leadership is all vacation stocks. Norwegian Cruise Line, right. Yeah. Royal Caribbean,
airlines.
Carnival, Caesars, Las Vegas Sands, the airlines, Wynn Resorts, Las Vegas. So obviously, the market today is reacting to the Pfizer news. And the rest of the market is taking the day off and kind of resting after the big sprint. The big sprint that it went on yesterday. Okay, we got more problems in China when we come back. I want to talk about that to lead off the second quarter. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now radio show. The Dow is up 40 right now, and the NASDAQ is still a little bit, S&P's up 4.5. The NASDAQ is kind of hovering right around, well, it's up 12 now, so the NASDAQ has now gone positive. But, as I said earlier, the S&P 500, here's the leaders in the NASDAQ. American Airlines, Wynn, resorts, Expedia, Booking.com, Marriott, the only really tech stock that's even in the top 15 or 20 for percent gain is Facebook, which is now Metaverse stock. So the hardcore techs, the semiconductors and the software stocks are pretty much seen a little bit of profit taking, not much, just a little bit. From yesterday's huge move, and I can't remember the last time I saw a 400-plus point move in the NASDAQ.
Yeah, that persisted pretty much all day. That was the that was kind of the big deal. It started, gaining steam and was pretty much up the same amount almost all day without much variance, really. So.
Yeah, I expected it to sell off like it usually does in the last couple hours of the day and say, well, a lot of the air came out of the tires, but the air never came out of the tires. Maybe just a little bit, but not really in the tech stocks. The air came out of the tires a little bit in the energy patch and some of the other areas. But like the semiconductor stocks, they just were, they gathered steam really throughout the day. There's one other macro outlook, and they seem to be the most bearish. Morgan Stanley, of course, they've been wrong now for I don't know how long. They're still arguing Tuesday that retail mania in stocks and other speculative assets has made the market vulnerable as the Federal Reserve turns to a more hawkish stance. Well, they've been wrong, but they're going to stick by their guns, and they're going to try to reason why they've been wrong. It's just those darn retail investors that keep running the market higher in spite of what Morgan Stanley is saying. They also have a big problem with the level of debt. It doesn't take much of an increase in interest rates for the entire system to shake. Morgan Stanley's chief strategist, Ruchir Sharma, he's one of the more notable bears. I think their target price for next year is $4,400, which obviously is lower than where it's at right now. Okay, this next story, we got to gnaw on this one a little bit. S&P is saying that China Evergrande default appears inevitable. They failed to pay coupons on two offshore bonds by the end of the 30-day grace period, according to media reports, putting the property developer on the brink of default. And heading for what may be one of China's largest debt restructuring. The S&P Global Rating says a default appears inevitable. Now, if you remember back several months, this rocked the market when this news started to break on Evergrande. I think it happened over a weekend, you know, and then on Monday the market was like, had this sickening drop to it. And then it kind of, you know, that's another pattern. The market seems to get used to panic attacks, and like just like this Omicron, all of a sudden the market's used to it, really. It's not shaking the market. It got used to Evergrande, but how big do you think a collapse of Evergrande, you know, that would be like the collapse of, not a Goldman Sachs, but maybe a BlackRock or a Blackstone. Do you think we need to worry about this, Barry?
Well, it depends. It's all about contagion, right? You take the old adage of the U.S., the U.S. sneezes, right, or coughs, and the rest of the world catches a cold. So in China, it just depends on how much other countries, other institutional investors, how much they have invested in this. A lot of times, the thought is with China is they keep a lot of certain types of capital within their borders. So, you could see where this creates some kind of domino effect within their own banking system, and that can cause some adversity between whether amongst their citizens, amongst their their businesses, but mostly potentially inside their own border. So the trick is really who owns this stuff, and I haven't got a big answer yet on terms of who all owns this
right.
Some of this debt. So that to me is probably the biggest worry. I think dollar amount wise it probably pales in comparison to 08, 09 for sure.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's really who holds the debt. And I think that's where, you want to figure out what other remember the old counterparty risk, right? And stress testing,
yeah.
All the banks. It just depends on who owns it.
Yeah.
And we'll probably find out as you get some of those defaults.
Yeah. And I'm not seeing a big sell off, in China. Their index FXI is kind of the ETF I watch. That's the China 50 index, which would be similar to our S&P 500. It's weak. It's been sideways for a long, long time, but I'm not seeing a big collapse there. But you would think it would be similar to something like we had in 08 and 09, which definitely affected the world markets. Our meltdown here in the U.S. when the S&P lost 53%. So I don't think we can brush it aside. I think it's something that we have to keep our eyes on. I put out a question yesterday to some of our subscribers. With all this, with Putin talking with Trump or with Biden yesterday, what are the odds of Russia going into Ukraine and just ignoring, all of the threats and everything? And then the second one, shoot a drop, could be China going into Taiwan. And one of our subscribers came back with a very good comment. He said, I don't think China would do anything before the Olympics are over, the Winter Olympics, that is. And that's probably true. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not going to go invade
right.
Taiwan and then hold the Olympics. So you can
probably
put that one.
Well, that's what Christina and I kind of talked about. Yep.
I think at some point, though, China is definitely trying to rebuild their empire, and they believe that China and Taiwan are one China. And the world sees it differently, so we can't really, but at least for now, I guess maybe we need to worry more about the Ukraine and Russia if any kind of skirmish were to develop there and other countries were to get involved and whatnot. That's what we call global events that we definitely have to always be aware of that are out there because those could definitely affect the market. Okay, when we come back, the second half of the show is always dedicated to talking about a lot of individual stocks. And that's what we'll be doing in the second half of the show. When we come back, this is Bill Gunderson, and Barry Kite. And the show is the Best Stocks Now show. Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, we've dipped into the red with the Dow. We're down 23. The NASDAQ is dead flat right at where it closed yesterday. But I think that's a positive that we're holding on to yesterday's big gains in the market. You know, Barry, looking at Seeking Alpha today, four of the top four trending articles on Seeking Alpha are about Alibaba.
I saw that as you were talking about China. They kept catching my eye, and I couldn't. At least two of the headlines I read seemed to be have a negative tone. I didn't get through all four of them. But yeah,
the stock's been hitting new lows since last year. I mean, it hit 300. Alibaba got up to over $300 a share in late 2020. Okay, that wasn't that long ago. I mean, a year ago. It's lost more than half its value since then. It's gone from 320 to 120. What is that, a 65% drop in Alibaba? And the first shoe to drop there was when, Jack Ma disappeared.
Yep, early November. Right.
He was a member of the Chinese Communist Party, and he also owned the South China Morning Post newspaper. And, they had some comments that weren't, I guess they did.
I texted you as soon as I heard those comments. I was like, well, that's going to, I'm like, yeah, what do you think we're going to see him again? And then, of course, it all unfolded the way it did, which was not surprising, but surprising at the same time.
So Alibaba becomes kind of one of these classic value stocks. And I've even seen a lot of the deep value investors go into Alibaba, based on its P.E. ratio, based on, other price to sales, stuff like that. And I continue to say that it's a value trap. And here's my problem with the stock that is seemingly so undervalued with a low P.E. The momentum and the performance is terrible. So I like to have both oars in the water. If you buy a stock just because it has a low P.E. ratio and looks to be a juicy value, you get an AT&T. You get an Alibaba. Okay. If you buy a stock that just has momentum and you totally, diss the valuation, you get some of these high-flying Coinbases and whatnot that eventually come back down to earth, Tilray, et cetera. So that's why I just think, as an investor, I learned a long time ago that I like to take into account the valuation and the momentum, and I weight them about equally, to be honest. And so let's just look at Alibaba's current ranking in the app. If I went just on value, it's probably an A-plus in value, but when you throw in the performance versus the rest of the market, Alibaba comes in at number 4,084 out of about 6,000 stocks, and it hit a new all-time low, or 52-week low, just 3 days ago. Now, a big firm is coming out today saying Alibaba is building a strong moat around its business. And I'm thinking, I think Jack Ma needs to build a strong moat around his house. Right?
Yeah, right.
Sometimes you wonder if these guys have a big position and they're trying to unload it and they put out a favorable report, and when people come in buying, they are calling a bottom. Macquarie, I think they're out of Australia or something like that. Macquarie Research, they specialize in foreign stocks, international, and a lot of commodity-like stocks. Their chief analyst is the analyst that covers Alibaba. Their share value has troughed, and the bulk of the risk is now factored into the stock. Anyways, I thought I'd bring that up. And when you see it in the top four stories are all about Alibaba, that tells me that a lot of people at Seeking Alpha own the stock, right? And they're looking for guidance.
Looking
what
for
should
eyeballs.
I do?
Right.
They're hoping. But I just, you know what? I just avoid stocks that are hitting new lows. I don't care what the valuation says. Okay, back to Intel just for a minute. I want to look at Intel. Intel has been a massive laggard in the chip industry. Massive laggard. There was a time when it held all the cards pretty much, and AMD was the laggard, but that all changed several years ago. And Intel's gone from, you know, its heights. It recently hit a new 52-week low, and now it's trying to revive itself. They bought Mobileye a long time ago, an Israeli company that has a technology for self-driving cars. And they paid a lot for Mobileye, I remember at the time, because it was very popular and those stocks were flying. It was one of the few out there at that time. Now there's a slew of these stocks with software for self-driving cars. But the CEO of Intel said that the spinoff of its Mobileye self-driving car unit will unlock a unique asset that will compare to Elon Musk's Tesla. In other words, they're saying that Intel deserves a much bigger multiple than they currently have because they possess this Mobileye, which compares to Tesla. To me, there's another good example of a value trap. Intel has a PE of 9. Why wouldn't we be all over that stock at just 9 times earnings and a dividend yield of 2.6%? How can you go wrong? I think we'll start to see some stories coming out on Seeking Alpha. Well, Intel isn't as bad as Baba. It's ranked number 1,343. And I would just, I guarantee you, when they spin off that Mobileye, it's going to take off for about 3 days, right? And then people are going to remember, you know, this thing was public before Intel bought it, and it was not a very good stock then. We're going to look to short that one, okay? When they spin off Mobileye, would you put that on your calendar?
Right.
Day three, after it goes to the moon, we're going to short the, you know what, out of Mobileye. So I'm not buying this Intel story that all of a sudden they're on a par with Tesla.
Well, and
with
the PE of 9. Yeah, I think it solidifies our thoughts on AMD, for example. You know, early on, you know, a year and a half or so ago, we were talking about, you know, in a Seeking Alpha article about how AMD had surpassed, you know, at least technology-wise, had created a big gap between them and Intel, and Intel kept having a number of missteps along the way. And really, this kind of just solidifies our thoughts on that because, to me, you know, you've created, essentially they're saying that this company is worth more outside of Intel than it is worth inside of Intel. So that just tells me that the Intel chip business by itself is worth less, right? You know, than you know, after this is going to be done. And so, you know, that to me, it just goes to show you that, you know, you're the actual underlying primary of business of Intel is lagging, and they kind of see it going to be lagging going forward.
They're reaching for straws to try to prop it up. AMD, on the other hand, is ranked number 25. BestStocksNowApp.com out of 6,000, and we still have a heavy position in AMD. It had a really nice day yesterday after a little bit of a pullback here recently. The other stock that was in the news yesterday, well, I've always said that Chewy was one of the best short plays of all time. They went public during the COVID. It's an online store for dogs and pet products, okay? They're selling dog food online, Chewy.com. And it went to the moon, and now it's hitting new 52-week lows. But they're teaming up. There's a new thing, health insurance for your pets. Trupanion, T-R-U-P, T-R-U-P, is teaming up with Chewy to offer health insurance for your cats and your dogs and whatnot. And this stock soared yesterday once again. Trupanion is now 154. Now, I would be more interested in Trupanion than I would be in Chewy.com. But when we come back, I'm going to feature another pet stock that I think is even better. There's no question that the pet business has exploded, and it exploded during COVID. And it continues to be a very profitable business, but right now there's only two or three companies that really dominate that industry, and I'm going to talk about one of them in the final segment of the show. They're in their news today. They're increasing their buyback. They're increasing their dividend, and they have a very major position in that whole pet industry. That will be one of the stocks we feature. Okay, and last but not least, there was all kinds of stocks yesterday from the battery. Everything kind of went up yesterday. That rising tide lifted all boats yesterday. And I saw big moves in the electric vehicle. I mean, the second and third tier ones, the battery chargers. You know what? I just think that's a very tough, tough place to be and very, very speculative place to be. What are the best places to be right now? Well, we'll try to figure out a few here to talk about in the final segment of the show. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Before I get to a couple that I like here, here's your extreme valuation of the day. Newest battery SPAC, DCRC, is set to list at 600 times 2021 sales. Okay. Not earnings, but sales. So, yeah, we want to be all over that one, DCRC. You know, I just don't think that battery makers are that big of a deal, really. It's not a really high profitable business. Think of car battery makers, just regular batteries. But anyways, they're going to go public, $1.2 billion on day one, 600 times next year's sales. That's craziness. Okay, now the pet stock that is really a stellar, Zoetis, which I'd have to look up the history. I think it was spun off from Pfizer. ZTS was the pet division of Pfizer, I want to say. They develop animal health medicines and vaccines. Okay, livestock need vaccines too. There's different kinds of things that impact livestock, companion animals, pets, etc. Zoetis is ZTS. This is a $107 billion company. Very dominant player in what they do. They pay a little bit of a dividend, about a half of a percent, but their growth has just been steady over the years at about 20% a year in earnings. It's hitting a new all-time high today. I've been watching it. I've been watching for a pullback. I kind of missed it in October. It pulled back to 190. Now it's back to 230. I can't really buy it right now at this level. It has a P.E. ratio of 49. You say, well, how can you pay 49 times? Well, you know, you got to look at the future growth, and you got to look at the earnings, their track record of growth, and the performance of the stock. It's currently ranked very high in my app. It's currently ranked number 130 overall, and I think, you know, Chewy, you can do Chewy if you want. The health insurance stock, I think, is worth watching, Trupanion, T-R-U-P, but Zoetis is really kind of the blue chip and the dominant company for me in that industry. Okay, and the other one here that's catching my eye today, because there is a report out on it, we own this sporting goods stock, Academy Sports. Wells Fargo says that it should be snapped up on any earnings dip. Okay, they're going to report earnings on Friday, and they say if it should sell off, after that earnings report, we would be all over it. Well, you know, we're down to really just three sporting, maybe four. I think there's four sporting goods stocks. And, you know, the Dick's Sporting Goods in our neck of the woods is crowded all the time, Barry, because really it's the only game in town.
Yeah, I've had to pick up a few things from there recently.
Yeah,
so it's,
me too.
They didn't have it at one, they had it at the other, so I've been to two in the area in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah,
Santa's been busy.
So. Yeah, we, so Dick's is, but Academy Sports is a competitor, but it's growing at a much faster clip. Their earnings growth over the last 5 years has averaged 110% per year. They're mostly in the South.
Yeah, they were a regional 16. Player, and so they're growing. You know, they've got more footprint to cover as they grow out of the Southeast.
We like, we like growth stories. Look up. Chipotle began with one store, and it became one of the great growth stories of all time. And there's been many, many, many examples that I could give you of growth stories. Now, having said that, sporting goods has always been kind of a low margin, kind of a tough business. But with the close down of all of the gyms, I don't think Planet Fitness is in our neighborhood anymore, is it? Didn't it?
If they are, it's in a. They might have one in the old mall, which is kind of their.
That's kind of their
bread and butter. But I'm trying to think.
We had one in Mount Pleasant here, and I think it closed down. So that's just a lot more people doing stuff at home and sports and in the house and whatnot. And so Academy Sports is getting an upgrade here by Wells Fargo. That symbol is ASO. So those two, Zoetis in the pet business, ASO in the sporting good business, those kind of are the two stocks that kind of stand out to me today. Okay, well, this is Wednesday, midweek. It's been a crazy week. We had two huge days on Tuesday and Wednesday. You know, we had to do a lot of soul searching and thinking and reasoning and, is this the real deal? Is this going to bring an end to the bull? And we decided, no, we're just going to sit right through it. This is panic number 72 since 2009 when this all began, when earnings of the S&P 500 got down to $53 per share. We went through the financial crisis. We came out of it, and it's been uphill ever since. Even during the COVID year, we remained bullish. We did some selling early on when it was really spooky and we didn't know where we were going to go with it all. But then we really, went all in March of last year, late March of last year, and did very, very well since then. We're still pretty much fully invested. We watch these panic attacks that come along, and of course there's ones out there on the horizon, like the Chinas and the Ukraines and the Evergrandes and you still have this virus floating around that could continue to mutate. But at the same time, we remain very vigilant, okay? I think that's the watchword, is to be vigilant and active and not passive. That's just our take on the market in this market that's turned passive. Man, I'd hate to be a retiree that's passive and lose 50-60%, in the next bear, which is out there somewhere. And we keep our ear to the ground. And we stay on top of it every week with the newsletter, which you can get a 2-free-week trial at GundersonCapital.com. And if you're not real comfortable with where you're at right now or you're doing it yourself and it's testing you, well, give us a call at 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST, and we'd be happy to talk to you. GundersonCapital.com. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.